I'm Elizabeth Alexander. I'm the director of the National Prison Project of the American Civil Liberties Union. The project's been around for about 30 years, litigating conditions of confinement in prisons across the country. At any given time, we have cases going in about 20 to 25 states, and we also do public education. I'm here because one of the things that we run into in the litigation that we do is a claim that the prison that we are attacking can't be unconstitutional because it's been accredited by the ACA. And so I want to speak a little bit about how that works. It's a commonplace in sociological theory that one of the things that an occupational group does when it's trying to raise its status is to attempt to redefine itself as a profession. And that's happened in all sorts of things we now consider professions. And that is why you have the ACA defining itself as it does. If you look at the literature, if you look at the website of the ACA, what you see is the ACA defining itself as a professional group. And what are the hallmarks of a professional group? Well, aside from things that now you can go into special programs to be taught to be a corrections professional, and the ACA actually has provisions for certifying someone as a corrections professional. The main thing it does, and the main thing that the organization is known for, is its standards, the standards by which they accredit not people, but institutions, prisons, jails, and juvenile facilities. And it's this function of the ACA that is really the most important thing it does. But the problem with it is that unlike the standards in the medical profession or in the legal profession, in which the goal of the standards is to make certain that when you look in the phone book and you find somebody, that person actually is going to function as a professional with minimum standards. The function of standards from the ACA is to make certain that the institution aren't subject to any other form of oversight. And in fact, that's pretty explicitly what the standards are supposed to do. If you look at the website for the ACA, and you click on the part of the website that it explains the standards, what the first listed benefit for having your prison accredited is that your liability insurance will go down. That is, someone is less likely to be able to sue you successfully if you have been accredited. And the second one is essentially the same thing. It's a defense in litigation. If you won't find that sort of thing, I am certain, if you look at the literature of the AMA or the ABA, that's not the way professions typically work. And so what's really going on here is that the ACA, through its standards, has adopted the form, but not the substance, of a professional organization. I'm certain many of you already know this, but let me just go over some basics. The United States holds over 2 million people in its prisons. We've got more than a quarter of all the prisoners in the entire world. This means that prisons are routinely overcrowded, under-maintained, and under-financed facilities, where substandard medical care and mental health care are commonplace. And so when the ACA is designing its standards, remember that unlike the standards that apply to doctors or lawyers or other professionals, there's really not all that much they can do about it because they don't control the budgets, and they don't control the policies. The government does. And so, by definition, these standards really could not be designed to be meaningful because there is nothing that the corrections industry could do to support those standards if they were higher. But in fact, the ACA standards go well beyond simply not being concerned with meaningful standards. They actually are used to keep institutions from being subject to oversight through some other way. The ACA has wholeheartedly embraced the function of the standards to keep prisons from outside scrutiny. Now, the ACA claims that, in fact, your prison will be less likely to be sued if you have been accredited through its process because the prison's better. But that is simply not true. Last year, I represented a prisoner at the maximum security facility in Lorton, Virginia, at a prison that had been just accredited before the events in the lawsuit. And what that prisoner had to tell us was that prison was a place where he was kept. He never got outside. He never even saw the outside. He was actually in his tiny cell more than 23 hours a day. The cell was filthy. There was human waste from other cells flooding into that cell on a routine basis. There was not a working ventilation system. The temperature was often over 100 degrees. And yet, that facility had been accredited by the ACA. And, of course, the District of Columbia attempted to use that accreditation as a defense in the lawsuit. But the jury thought better of it and awarded this prisoner $175,000 in damages, including punitive damages, for the maintenance of that prison. And that's just not an aberration. Last year, and some of you may be familiar with this, the Suffolk County Detention Center in Massachusetts, which is a jail, received a score of 98.96 in the ACA accreditation process. Just after that accreditation report was released, the seven guards from the jail were indicted on federal charges of beating up prisoners. And immediately after that, a number of women prisoners and former prisoners came forward to say that they had been raped and sexually assaulted by staff at the facility. In another case in Louisiana, the ACA accredited a juvenile facility in 1996. The same year it was accredited, in a one-week period, 28 children were treated at a local hospital for broken bones. One day, 8 children had their eardrums broken in beatings. In just looking at this issue for a couple of minutes on Friday, I located additional prisons in California, in Florida, and in Texas, in which after the ACA had accredited a facility, a federal judge found that prison or jail or juvenile facility to be unconstitutional. How can that be? Well, Dale Seacrest, who is a corrections person who helped design the original standards, told the Boston Globe recently that he was embarrassed when he went to see some of the prisons accredited by the ACA. But it's easy to understand how these dangerous facilities can get accredited when you understand the accreditation process. Let's go back to the Suffolk County Jail for a minute. That's the place near Boston that I mentioned in which the guards were indicted and women prisoners have filed suit about rape. The person who was in and got the 98% on its accreditation process, who was in charge of accrediting that facility? The person who was taken through to give them this rating was someone named Harold Clark, who's the director of the Department of Corrections in Nebraska. And what is the department that he runs like? Well, very recently, the Nebraska State Agency, released a report about medical care in the Nebraska Department of Corrections. The beginning of that report quotes a doctor who had been employed by the system. who said, quote, "I'm ashamed of what I have become. I really am. For the first time, I stood up and said, I can't kill anymore. Too much. These are human beings, for crying out loud." And so I guess it's no wonder that the Director Clark was not overtly troubled by the rapes and the beatings at the Suffolk County Detention Center, because after all, apparently nobody died in Suffolk County. In response to the controversy about the Suffolk County Detention Center, an official of the ACA refused to release any information about what facilities they had actually refused to accredit, but claimed that, yes, there are some that we've refused to accredit. And it's not just that the ACA process allows the waiver of its, the so-called standards in the book aren't necessarily the ones that apply, because if you look at just the things like the space and the Lorton facility, you would see that it could never meet, it could never be accredited by the standards. Well, how do they then accredit Lorton? They waive the standards. And the team that goes through has the ability to waive standards so that, that a prison can still get accredited. And let's also look at who's on the standards committee, the designs of standards they do have. The head of the standards committee is the head of the Virginia Department of Corrections. His name is Ronald Angelon. Let me just tell you a couple things about Ronald Angelon. Until recently, the state of Connecticut kept a couple hundred prisoners at a Virginia facility because of overcrowding in the Connecticut system. In that Virginia system, with just a couple hundred Connecticut prisoners, two of the Connecticut prisoners died. Both of them were mentally ill. One committed suicide, and the other one died after he had been repeatedly stunned with a stun gun by guards and then placed it and left in restraints. After these events, my office sued to get those Connecticut prisoners out, and a Connecticut state agency that's charged with the responsibility for monitoring the care of the mentally ill in the state went down to inspect the Virginia prison. Ronald Angelon would not let the state agency in to inspect his prison, which I think demonstrates his approach to outside oversight. One more thing about Ronald Angelon. Prior to his current position, he was head of the Department of Corrections in the state of Nevada. And that was until the year 1994. While he was head of corrections in Nevada, he had a policy that is extremely rare in American prisons, and that was he allowed guards to shoot firearms at guns at prisoners within the prison, as opposed to someone escaping from the prison. And in one prison in Nevada, during a one-year period, there were 50 times that guards shot prisoners. We sued them, Angelon left, and the next year, there were only 8 incidents of the use of firearms in that prison. And the other use of force also declined in a like manner. And in that, in our lawsuit, we got sworn testimony from the new head of corrections in Nevada that the previous policies had been wrong and inappropriate, and the warden said the same thing too. The federal judge ultimately found that those previous practices had been unconstitutional. But now, Angelon has taken those practices to Virginia, so you have the same practices going on in Virginia prisons. Guards carry guns within the housing unit, and they have access to a whole, not just one kind of stun gun, but a whole arsenal of things to use, to use electric shock on prisoners. An editorial published in the Virginian, the Pilot, which is a Norfolk, Virginia newspaper, declared that, and here I'm quoting, If the price is vindictive or even abusive treatment of prisoners, while hurdles are placed in the way of public oversight, then the price is too high and he, meaning referring to Angelone, should go. I testified before Angelone and the rest of his standards committee a couple years ago with regard to the practice of the issue of keeping juveniles separate from adult offenders. And the reason that you want to do that is that if you put a juvenile in an adult facility, that child is several times more likely to commit suicide and several times more likely to be the victim of sexual assault. Nonetheless, as predicted, with Angelone leading the charge last time around, the Standards Committee made it easier to remove the separation between juveniles and adults. I understand that yet another motion to water down that standard even further was being debated at this ACA convention, and I have no doubt that once again that the already deeply flawed standard will be watered down even more. Nothing could be more indicative of the true purpose of the standards than the decision of the ACA membership to put in charge someone like Angelone in the Standards Committee. It's like appointing a wolf to watch the hen house. He advocates dangerous and reactionary practices, and as shown in the episode with the Connecticut State Agency, this person, who's supposed to be in charge of standards, has nothing but contempt for even public accountability of the prisons. When we look beyond the sheep's clothing of the standards, what we really see is not the professional face that the ACA attempts to present to the public, but the American Wolves Association. Thank you.